This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky in May. Of course, the nights are getting shorter, and really you've got to wait till perhaps 10 o'clock to have a really dark sky. But if you do so, looking towards the southwest, you'll see that rather lovely constellation Leo, looking like one of the lions in Trafalgar Square. And just below, there's an interloper we'll come to later, which is Mars. Coming down a little bit towards the south, we have the constellation of Virgo. Its brightest star is Spica. And about 5 degrees away, as we shall see, is the planet Saturn. So that's two planets to look at during the month. If we move over from Leo towards the east, we pass through what's called the realm of the galaxies. It's where the heart of the Virgo cluster lies, and a small telescope will show quite a number of them. Then you come to a bright star called Arcturus, in the constellation of Bootes. Just beyond that is a little circlet of stars called Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. And then we come to Hercules. The four brightest stars make up what is called the Keystone. And if with binoculars or a small telescope, you work two-thirds of the way up the right-hand side of the Keystone, you should see a little fuzzy object. That's the loveliest globular cluster called M13 that we can see in the northern sky. And then rising over towards the east, we have the start of a lovely part of the heavens, the constellations of Cygnus the Swan, Lyra, and also Aquila. And the brightest star you'll see first is Vega in Lyra. Low on the horizon, a bit towards the north, at that time will be Cygnus the Swan with its brightest star Deneb. But as the night progresses, they'll rise higher in the sky as well. It's also a very good time to look at Ursa Major if you don't mind cricking your neck, because it's almost overhead. The plough is the most obvious part. If you look at the three stars that make up the handle of the plough, or sometimes called the Big Dipper, you might, even with your unaided eye, see it's actually a double star. They're called Alcor and Mizar, Mizar being the brighter. But with a small telescope, looking at Mizar, you'll see it's a double star as well. So it's a very nice little lollipop to look at in the sky. So let's have a look at the planets this month. Well, we're not going to see Jupiter. It passes behind the Sun on May the 13th. It's called Superior Conjunction. It would just be visible at the very end of May when it rises just 45 minutes before dawn. And you might, if you try very hard, glimpse it with binoculars just above the eastern horizon. But to be honest, really, you need to wait a couple more months to see it well in the morning sky. Saturn, we'll come back to in the highlights, but that reached opposition due south at about midnight on April the 15th. So in fact, it's now visible quite well in the evening sky. And it's about 25 degrees above the eastern horizon after sunset and is in the south about midnight, British summertime. It then has an elevation of some 33 degrees and it's, as I said, just about 5 degrees up and to the left of the first magnitude star Spica. It's moving westwards across the sky in what we call retrograde motion through the constellation of Virgo. As it does so, its magnitude drops from plus 0.3 to plus 0.5. And at the same time, of course, its angular size falls from about 19 to 18.4 arc seconds. As I've said before, sadly, in contrast to Jupiter, which is quite high in the ecliptic, and hence high above our horizon, Saturn's heading to the more southerly parts of the ecliptic, so for quite some considerable time will not be seen that high up. However, nicely, the rings are opening out. They're now about 13 degrees to the line of sight. So in fact, Saturn is appreciably brighter than we saw during the last apparition. With a small telescope on the night of good seeing, you should easily spot what is called Cassini's division within the ring system. And given a scope with an aperture of 6 inches or greater, you might even spot Encke's division in the outer ring, and also perhaps the inner elusive C-ring, or crepe ring, as it's sometimes called. Well, Mercury is another planet we don't really see this month. It's barely visible, low above the eastern horizon as May begins, and might be just glimpsed with binoculars 5 degrees above the horizon at sunrise, shining at magnitude zero. And it rapidly disappears from view before it reaches Superior Conjunction, lying behind the Sun, on the 27th of May. Well, I mentioned Mars earlier. It's lying below the body of Leo, the lion, and it's still, at the beginning of May, some 60 degrees above the western horizon, an hour after sunset. It's now moving away from us, so its magnitude is fading from minus 0.1 to plus 0.5 during the month as it moves westwards, increasing its distance from Regulus, the brightest star in Leo, from about 6 to 15 degrees. Now, at the same time, of course, its angular size is shrinking. It starts the month at about 10 arc seconds, but that drops to 8 arc seconds. So it's not so easy to see any details, but given a night of good seeing, it might just be possible to see some markings on the surface. Well, you can have hardly failed to spot Venus, which is still dominating the southwestern sky after sunset. In fact, it starts the month some 39 degrees away from the sun, and at sunset is still 34 degrees above the horizon. And that's about as high as it ever gets, actually. As May begins, it's also at its brightest, magnitude minus 4.7. And on April the 30th, just at the very end of the previous month, April, it achieved what's called its greatest illuminated extent, which is the largest apparent illuminated area, having a disk 30 arc seconds across, which is 27% illuminated. Now, as Venus moves towards the Earth quite rapidly now, its apparent angular size increases to 57 arc seconds. It will only have an elevation then, sadly, of 6 to 7 degrees at sunset. But in the last week of May, the thin crescent should easily be visible in binoculars, and it is said that keen-eyed observers may even spot this with their unaided eye. So why not give that a try? And I might just give you warning that as Venus passes what is called inferior conjunction, that's closest to the Earth, on the 6th of June, it passes right in front of the Sun, the second and the last Venus transit this century. But sadly, the UK is not the best place to see it. But more of that next month. So what about the highlights for May? Well, as I've already said, Saturn is at its best in the evening now, and that's well worth having a look at. It takes Saturn about 29.4 years to complete one orbit, and during one half, we see the northern hemisphere best, and that's due to the tilt of the rotation axis, and for the other half, we see the southern hemisphere. So following the time when we saw the rings edge on a year or so ago, we're now seeing the northern hemisphere. And though they're not as prominent as those seen in Jupiter's atmosphere, there are belts and zones which can be seen. The belts are thought to be warmer gases low down in the atmosphere, whilst the brighter zones may well be ice crystals and clouds in the upper, colder atmosphere. If it's really dark, and you've got an 8-inch or so telescope, there's some chance you might pick out several of the moons. A small telescope will easily show the largest moon, Titan, but given an 8-inch telescope and a really dark night around new moon, good chance to see several others. Now, we have something quite special on May the 5th and 6th. It's called a supermoon. And the point is this, it's at a time when the full moon corresponds to what is called perigee, when the moon is actually closest to us at the time it is full. This happens reasonably often, and it wasn't that long ago when it was sort of highlighted in the press and the television. And they said, quite incorrectly, that this was when the moon was closest to the Earth for a very, very long time. It obviously gets close to the Earth once every month as it goes around its elliptical orbit, but you get a supermoon, or a megamoon as some call it, when it's actually very close to full at the time of perigee. Now, on the 5th and 6th of May, perigee corresponds very, very closely with the full moon. At transit, seen from the UK, it will be about 354,600 kilometres away from us, and that is the smallest distance since 1912 in January, so for about 100 years, just over. The effect of the elliptical orbit is that the apparent diameter of the moon varies by about 12%, and that actually means that the size, the apparent area, changes by about 30%. So when you see a full moon close to apogee, it really does look quite big. That is really quite a difference. So try and have a look perhaps as it rises on the evening of the 5th of May, if it's clear, at about 8.15 BST. And of course, we all know that near the horizon, the moon looks very, very big. It's called the moon illusion. The cause of that illusion is disputed, but the particular explanation that I like, and many believe as well, is due to the fact that we perceive the sky above us as forming a flattened rather than a hemispherical dome. We thus believe that objects near the horizon are further away from us. and our minds tend to make them appear larger than when we believe, in quotes, that we're seeing them closer to us, as of course the moon would be when we see it high in the sky. That might be well worth looking at. I mentioned the moons of Saturn. The 20th of April is quite a good night to have a look because there's quite a nice tight grouping around Saturn, and it's around the time of new moon. Even the smallest telescopes will show 9th magnitude Titan. Now, on the morning of May the 6th, after that supermoon, there is in fact a meteor shower. It's called the Eta Aquarids, and that's because they come from the constellation Aquarius. However, because of course it's very close to full moon, even though that will now in fact be on the far side of the sky, you're not going to see all that many. There might be typically 25 meteors per hour, but you'd only tend to see the brighter ones. And the best time really to have a look is just in the hour or so before dawn, because at that time the moon will be furthest over on the opposite side of the sky. Its effect will be least. It's believed that the Eta Aquarids result from dust particles that were released from Comet Halley in an eruption as it neared the sun some 4,000 years ago. And I'm slightly amazed they can find that out. So that's May the 6th in the morning, if you can stay up or get up early. Two more. May the 22nd, you have a chance of seeing two very thin crescents, Venus and a nearby new moon. Now, we can always see, if it's clear, a very thin crescent moon. You don't often see it when just above is the planet Venus, which is also very, very close to being, in effect, new and has a very thin crescent. So that's worth having a look at, May the 22nd. On the 26th of May, the waxing crescent moon passes over the position of the open cluster M67 in the constellation of Cancer the Crab. Now, the nicest thing to see is when the stars disappear behind the dark limb of the moon. Sadly, it'll still be quite bright then. But you should, at about 11 p.m. or just before, be able to see them appear behind the lit side of the moon. That should be quite a nice thing to have a look at, and binoculars or a small telescope are what you really need. So there are some nice things to look for in May. I know the nights are not as long, but I hope you get some good observing.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now, here's John Field with what you can see in the southern night sky.
Kia ora and welcome to the May broadcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. May sees Orion the Hunter low in the western evening sky below Sirius. Sirius Takarua is the brightest star in our night sky. Sirius marks the head of one of the two dogs following the Hunter down in the sky. Sirius is only the brightest star because it is nearby at 8.7 light years away. Sirius is often known as the dog star, as it is the brightest star in Canis Major, the large dog. Sirius, being so bright, often twinkles like a diamond when close to the horizon, as the air currents break up its light into separate colours. The second smaller dog is below Sirius and is marked by Procyon. Orion is upside down and low in the west in our southern hemisphere view. A line of three bright stars forms his belt. A fainter line of stars and above to the left of the belt form his sword. To most southern hemisphere sky watchers, the belt and sword form the pot, or the saucepan, now tilted on its side. Māori call these three stars Tautoro. In the sword of Orion, we find a hazy star marking the Orion Nebula. Visible to the unaided eye is a haze, and in binoculars is a misty glow around the middle star. It is a vast cloud of dust and gas about 1,300 light years away. Ultraviolet light from a massive, extremely hot star in the cloud is causing it to glow. Stars are still forming in a giant cloud that sits behind the glowing nebula. In early June, Orion can be seen both in the west at dusk and in the east at dawn. To the right of Orion are two bright stars, Castor and Pollux, marking the head of the twins, Gemini. In the south, we find Crux, a southern cross, and the two pointers Alpha and Beta Centauri, high overhead. Running between Crux and Sirius along the path of the Milky Way are the constellations of Carina the Keel and Vela the Sails. These two constellations were once part of the great ship Argo. This region is home to a large number of bright stars, star clusters and nebulae that can be easily viewed with the unaided eye, binoculars or telescope. The Eta Carina Nebula is a bright nebula that covers an area of the sky four times larger than the Orion Nebula. Although bright at magnitude 1, this nebula tends to blend in with the glow of the Milky Way, whilst the Orion Nebula stands out due to its dark background sky, and many people are more familiar with Orion. Sweeping around Eta Carina with binoculars will reveal several star clusters along with glowing clouds of gas and dust that are traced with dark lanes. Scorpius and Sagittarius can be seen rising in the east after sunset. These two constellations cross the widest and brightest region of the Milky Way, and this provides a stunning sight when viewed from a dark location. By late evening, this area is well above our horizon and is host to a number of beautiful and interesting objects. To the west of Antares, the brightest star in Scorpius is the globular cluster known as M4. Visible in good binoculars, it has been seen by some observers with the unaided eye from a dark sky location. A 4-inch or greater telescope reveals individual stars in this cluster along with some curved loops and streams of stars. 4 degrees northwest of Antares is another globular cluster, M80. Visible in small telescopes as a hazy ball, larger telescopes reveal it as a dense cluster of stars. Near to the Scorpion's tail are two bright star clusters called M6 and M7. Both clusters are visible to the human eye as a bright glow in the Milky Way. Binoculars will reveal individual stars in the cluster. M6 is known as the butterfly cluster due to its resemblance to a butterfly with outstretched wings. M7 is the southernmost of the Messier objects and is a spectacular sight in binoculars and wide field telescopes. This cluster is between 800 and 1,000 light years away, and about 80 stars can be seen in a small telescope. During late April and early May, there is a bright meteor shower, the Eta Acrids. This shower is associated with material left behind by Comet Halley. This shower can produce up to 60 meteors per hour. Unfortunately, the peak on the 5th of May is one day before the full moon, and this will severely impact on the number of meteors we'll be able to observe. The radiant will rise in the northeast after midnight, and by 3 a.m. it will be well placed for viewing. The planets Mars and Saturn can be seen in our evening sky. Mars will be in the north, shining with a red glow. Saturn, also in the north, is a bright yellow star and is near to the star Spica. Venus will be lost in the evening twilight glare as it prepares to align with the Sun for its transit on the 6th of June. We will look at the transit in next month's program. Many thanks for listening to our Jodcast, and we hope you have clear skies and wish you all great observing.